What's up, everybody? Thanks for listening to the BTOSports.com podcast show. BTOSports.com has teamed up with us to offer you a great deal on your next moto-related purchase. It's easy. Fill up your shopping cart with at least $100 of merchandise and type M-A-T-T-H-E-S in the coupon section during checkout and you are hooked up. One more thing, folks. If you're looking for more Mathis, you're in luck. He's easy to find. Just bookmark PulpMX.com and follow Mathis on Twitter at Twitter.com/PulpMX.
Responsible if it does. What are you gonna do about it anyway? You won't have a head. You have been warned.
Welcome to the BTOSports.com podcast show, brought to you by Trans World Motocross, hosted by Steve Mathis.
Welcome to the BTOSports.com Transworld Motocross Podcast Show. I'm your host, Steve Mathis, and this week, a special guest all the way from the Netherlands, which is Holland, I believe, for us Americans, is a longtime GP follower, the owner of MXLarge.com and Transworld Motocross GP contributor, Jeff Meyer. MX Jeff, what's happening?
Yeah, not a lot. It's my birthday, so I've been celebrating and having a good time.
I can't believe you want to do this on your birthday. Thank you. I appreciate it. Makes me feel
special.
Well,
you know, I wouldn't say I'm a motocross fan anymore, but, you know, it's so deep in my blood. Anything about motocross is pretty much fun, and I'm open for talking about anything.
Right, right. So right off the bat, can we just scream Langston, Langston, Langston?
I'd rather do Reed because he's just one.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you did bring that. You brought those names a long time ago into the forefront of the motocross online community. I do remember that.
And I'd like to mention also, I actually did those. When I said those, Reed, and Langston, they hadn't been to America yet.
No, I know. I remember, yeah.
And I remember when I did Reed, and I, you know what it's like on the computer. You say what you want, and nobody's going to punch you in the face, so you just keep typing. And I remember saying, you know, this guy will beat Ricky Carmichael. And, okay, he never beat him straight up for a full season. But I remember when I said that, people said, you're an idiot. And I mean, you know, I've got to shout their names when they're coming from the GPs and they're going over there and it looks as though they're going to do okay. It's always nice to spread the word.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Before we get too far deep into this, how long have you been, you're an Australian, living in Holland, following the GPs. How did that sort of happen?
Well, I used to, my dad was a motocross photographer in the 70s in Australia, and he obviously taught me stuff, took me to the motocross. Later in life, I met a Dutch woman, came back to Holland. I'd been to Europe several times for the Motocross the Nations and stuff, ended up moving here, and I was painting houses and all doing all sorts of crappy jobs to make a living. And then I, you know, went to a race for a couple of European magazines that went to the 1993 Motocross the Nations. And got the paychecks back, and I thought, hey, this is pretty good. So I started chasing it up, and I've been doing it ever since.
Okay, yeah, wow, long time. I didn't realize you were around that long.
I was doing it in Australia in the 80s when Marty Motes and Jimmy Ellis and all those guys were racing in Australia. You know, so I've been doing it probably since I was 15. Well, I was 49 today, so it's quite a long time.
Yeah. It's a bad deal about Sharky. Sorry to hear about that, for sure. Big, he was here in America for a few years. years, and couldn't find anybody say a bad word about the guy. No way. Yeah.
No, and I've realized. I mean, obviously, I met Andrew when he was here and got to know him a bit and hung out with him a little bit. But I realized after he'd passed away, and I started getting mails from people, letters and stuff, how much he put into his fans and giving them you know, t-shirts and jerseys and riding gear. I've even got a pair of riding pants that I'm not a collector at all, but he just had to give me these riding pants with his name on the back, and you know. I went into the garage soon after he passed away and sort of checked out. They took the dust off and sort of, I don't know what I'll do with him, but
right.
Yeah, he was a good guy.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. Now, when you're talking about Langston, and I was actually working at KTM in 2000 on the factory team, and Langston had come over before the European season started, and he was really kind of a pain in the ass to us because he just kept needing parts every day, you know, because he was just practicing with his dad and everything, and he was kind of a pain in the ass, but we did see him ride, and we're like, hey, this guy's pretty good. And then, you know, he had the epic battles with Brownie and Dauber over there. And then Reed came over, and I mean, Everett's handled him pretty good, but he was impressive in a lot of races. Who are some of the guys that you've seen come through the GPs that have impressed you the most in all your time? Just come out of nowhere, just raw speed. I mean, obviously Everett's the Everett, you know, that's the easy one, but.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, I don't know if sometimes it's not even about raw speed. Sometimes it's about seeing somebody. I remember Grant in 1998 or 99, and he was only like 15 or something. And I remember him standing on the starting grid watching Alessio Chiodi, who was a three-time world motocross champion. And Grant was standing there watching him, and you could just see Grant's mind ticking over, just watching him, what he was doing on the start grid. That, to me, that says more to me when, I mean, it's like this Jeffrey Hurlings kid. You know, he's 15, he's won a GP. just to see that kid when he's, you know what it's like. You see somebody and you think, wow, that guy is really switched on.
Yeah.
And I mean, Hurlings, you know, this current breed, Hurlings, Roxon, Muscan, I mean, they're phenomenal. I mean, I really honestly think those guys could come to America, race Supercross, and all be super, super successful, or even maybe better than Christoph Purcell. I really mean that.
Yeah, yeah.
And as far as older guys, you know, yeah, Stefan, Poole, Langston, there's not a real lot, you know. There's, you know, I mean, even guys like Tyler and that, they're very, very good riders. But I would never say Tyler, Rat Ray. Or there's only some guys, and they're just guys that are super, super switched on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we're five rounds deep into the GP, Glen Helen GP coming up this weekend. I have to say, after five rounds, following the series, I've been DVRing it and watching it when I can. Kind of predictable in the fact that, you know, we have Musquin, Rocks, and Herlins pretty much, I think, a step above everybody in MX2. Caroli and Nagel in MX1 with DeSalle right in there, but DeSalle had that one really bad race where he missed it. But kind of predictable. The preseason favorites are coming through, huh?
And I mean it's KTM. Gee, KTM. I mean, okay, Roxon and DeSalle are sort of keeping Suzuki relatively happy, but just that KTM team. I mean, that is so super, super impressive. The way Stefan and the way Pit Beira run that team. It's like one big family. You know, you've got Hurlings and Muscan in there. Caroli, Nagel, yeah, like you said. Yeah, they're all pretty much. I mean, I must say though, MX2. There's a few guys, you know, Stephen Frossard's coming. He's starting to catch up to him a little bit. Sean Simpson's also coming back from an injury, and he's slowly catching up. And the great thing about those front guys is they've really pulled the other guys
up
to a faster speed. Everybody's sort of following them and improving their own speed. You know, Jake Nichols from England, he's suddenly gone from 17th in the world to running, you know, fifth in some GPs. And I mean, honestly, I was talking to Josh Coppins about it the other week, and he said the same thing. It's like the depth in Grand Prix at the moment, a lot due to Ustreams plan of, you know, younger kids in MX2, the older guys in MX1.
24? Is it 24? What is it?
23.
23, yeah, and you're out.
And but not only that, the European Championship is also run by Ustream, and that's improved. Mm-hmm. And like you guys have in America, you know, there seems to be a lot more younger guys coming up now. So it's really, really super strong. But yeah, it seems as though KTM, they're really switched on at the moment.
Yeah, the bikes look good. And you know, Everett's was here this past weekend at Hangtown, and talking to him on and off the record, he was pretty, very excited, very happy. You've seen the results. Well, actually, let's talk more about the GPs. If Roczen hadn't had that DNF, he'd be right there with Musquin. In your eyes, who's going to win this thing?
Gee,
MX2.
You know, it's really hard because at one stage you're thinking, gee, Musquin's won the first three GPs or he's something like that.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking, okay, these young guys look really fast, but Musquin doesn't look that fast, but he keeps winning. And then he's had a couple of big crashes, and then you're thinking, oh gee, maybe these guys are caught up to him. And then here he is again; he's 26 points ahead.
Right.
I would tip him because he's just really switched on. He's already been a champion. He seems to be taking the pressure. You know, a lot of guys struggle in that year of defending a championship. Yeah, yet he seems to really thrive on it. So I would say him. You know, both those 15-year-old, you know, Roczen and Herling had trouble in Spain, which is exactly last year. Gaudia Pauline had trouble in Spain, and that's when Musquin made his break on the other guys,
right,
which is exactly what happened this year. I don't know. I'd say Musquin in the MX2 for sure.
Now, Herling's actually surprising. You know, he's Dutch, right?
Yep.
I always thought Dutch guys were more sand guys than anything, but Herling's has proven that he's for real on whatever kind of surface you want.
Yeah, but on the other hand, you know, Mark de Roop is one of the best sand riders, but he's won, I think, three of his GPs have been on hard pack.
Oh, have they?
First GP win was hard pack. Mind you, Herling's is just a kid that everybody said at the start of the year, you know, oh, he's good in sand.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people have seen him in Dutch Championship races and said, I have never seen anybody ride a bike like this kid.
Right.
And so he's, but he's improved. I mean, his rate of improvement is just incredible. I mean, you know, I say Musquin now, but if Herling's improves a little bit more here and there, and by the end of the year, he may well be miles better than Musquin. Who knows?
Yeah. I know that you know he's on that Pro Circuit team over there, Pro Circuit supported team, and I know for a fact Mitch has talked to him about next year if this age rule in America gets changed again, which it might. I think Herling's could see himself over here pretty soon.
Yep. Yeah, Herling's is with KTM, huh?
Yeah.
Are you thinking Frossard?
No. I thought Herling's was on that Pro Circuit Dutch team.
No, Herling's is on the Pro Circuit. That's Van Horebeek and Stephen Frossard.
Oh, okay. My bad. I know he's talked to Herling's anyways. So you could see that kid over here pretty soon. Now, in the MX1... Stefan told me that Nagel wants to try a 350 again.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Ooh. Yeah, he told me that this weekend. So, and obviously with Mike Alessi's, I would say, pretty sensational ride this past weekend.
Yeah,
I'm sure you saw the results.
Yeah.
How's that bike look over there? Obviously, pretty good.
Well, at first, in Bulgaria, it looked a little bit slower because Bulgaria is a pretty fast, hard-packed track with some up and down hills, not big up and down hills, but where you need the speed. And in the first moto, Cairoli looked a little bit slower than the other guys, yet when it roughed up a little bit, Cairoli was all over him and just doing things on the track that the other guys couldn't do. You know, that thing, Nagel's on... Having talked to Stefan and Max and everybody else, you know, it's super fast, but it's not really, it seems as though you've really got to know where to go around corners and stuff. It's not like you can just throw it around. And the 350, like you said, a Lacy, that hole shot he had. Yeah. I mean, Cairoli's done that as well, and you think, how the hell can this bike hole shot when it's a 350 and these guys are on 450s? So it seems like the speed's not a problem, and obviously the handling is like a 250, and you'd have to nearly say, I'm pretty much overstate things pretty often. And but in my opinion, it's got to be one of the best bikes they've made. Like, not only KTM, but anybody.
Any bike, right? Well, it looked fine this weekend. There's a spot in one of the corners that's really off camber, and the guys were taking the inside, and there developed a massive acceleration hole. So the guys would almost come to a complete stop, and then have to drag race up a hill. And let me tell you, Mike's bike looked fine up that hill. You know.
Yeah.
How has there been any dissension in that KTM MX1 team with Nagel and Cairoli and different bikes? And I know it's Caroli's team and all that. How's that been going?
Because they're both really good guys. They both like each other. Uh-huh. They both have a huge respect for each other. no, there's none of that at all. And to be honest, KTM wouldn't let that happen. I mean, I talked to Pitt at the beginning of the year because I said this team is so changed from 2006 when there was a lot of anger in the team. And Pitt said to me, we will not have people in this team walking around with a down face, being negative. Everybody has to be positive, from the guy cleaning the helmets to the mechanics to the riders to Stefan and Pitt themselves. So that's not going to happen in this case. It's in my eyes the most professional team in the paddock, and just the way they do everything so methodically and it's really impressive.
They're going to stay on top of it, huh? What about Sebastian Porcel? What's happened to him?
Yeah, he's a bit like there's a bunch of guys that are really fast.
Uh-huh.
Guys like Barragon, Purcell, Ken Dodiker, any of those guys are as fast as anybody. You know, as Sebastian proved against James Stewart at the Donations, they're all super fast. But when there's guys like Cairoli and DeSalle and Nagel who are not only fast but maybe mentally stronger than those guys really struggle to then. We've got situations in the MX1 where you've got guys like, Josh is on a Aprilia, but he's still a very good rider and he's riding that thing awesome. But we've got guys like DeRuva, Purcell, Coppens, the Dyker, Albertson, a bunch of guys running around in 15th to 20th.
Yeah.
Guys that are GP winners and are on their day are the fastest guys. It's really, MX1 is just so competitive that it's really difficult to. The thing is, we haven't got tracks like in America that are flat and there's not a lot of grooves and they're just super fast. So if you do get a bad start, you can't make it up. A lot of our tracks are pretty rutted up and pretty slow, so there's a lot of possibilities to get to make up ground. But they're just not doing it because there's so much depth.
Yeah, Swanepoel, another guy thought would do better.
There's a lot. Sometimes you'll see it and you'll see from 10th to 20th and you're thinking, this should be the front of this. These guys should be running at the front.
Yeah, but then again, there's, guys like Boog and that Russian guy that Boog was a good MX2 rider, but I wasn't really that impressed with him when I saw him. But he's up there, and the Russian dude I'd never heard of, he's filling a spot in the top 10 every week.
They're both been impressive.
What's your take on Jimmy Albertson for the Americans listening? How's he been doing? I know he got hurt, but what are you taking on that? What you think?
Yeah, it's hard to say because Jimmy's a great guy. He's really a nice,
as you know,
he's a really good kid. I get on great with him and really enjoy him and Greg's company. I don't know. It's pretty hard coming over here. It's different culture. It's totally different than America. Just completely the opposite. And people really thrive on that. Guys like Mike Brown, he just thought, I'm just getting on with this. I think Jimmy maybe thinks about it a little bit and does get down sometimes. From having talked to them, that seems to be his problem when he was running the Nationals, because he shows really good speed. And you talk to John Vandenberg, who who trains him, you know, he says he really looks good in practice, but then he just seems to struggle in the races. But I think that's a lot to do with it. It's just so super competitive, and he's struggling to... I would love it if he had a really... apparently he's doing Glen Helen now.
Yep.
So I really hope he can get a good result there and sort of try and build on it, because he's a hard worker and he deserves to get some results. But, you know, it's unfortunately, a lot of Americans come here and struggle.
Somebody was telling me, I think it was DV, like, if you don't have a good... You have a short amount of time for practice. And if you don't have a good practice time, you don't get a good gate pick for the qualifying race. And then you don't get a good start. And then you don't get a good qualifying race. And then you don't get a good moto gate pick. And it's a real game to be on your game all the time, because your whole weekend could be affected, you know, by your gate pick in each individual race.
Yeah, and Jimmy's only been qualifying. I think in Volkanovski he maybe qualified 12th fastest, but he's generally been around 17. Mm-hmm. Now, as you know yourself, generally the top 10 guys seem to not have too much of a disadvantage on the first few. Mm-hmm. But once you're outside the top 10, it seems as though you're too far out, and then you're going to struggle. And the Hondas don't. I don't know. Maybe I'm talking wrong, but it seems as me the Hondas aren't that great out of the start. They haven't been, you know, they're not matching the KTMs or the Suzukis.
I was bummed out at our guy DeRivers' finish at Valkenswaard. I don't know. Maybe he's finally not become the Sandmaster anymore.
Yeah, I think he's in a bit of a rut.
Is he on a Suzuki team now?
He's on a Suzuki, yeah. And it's not a bad bike, apparently, so he's telling me.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, Mark's been GP rider for probably more than 10 years. You know, he's a really sweet guy and one of the nicest guys in the paddock. Mm-hmm. But, you know, everybody's time comes, and I don't know if Mark's has maybe come. Maybe he's starting to think too much about all the injuries he's had, and he has had a lot of bad injuries where most guys maybe would have stopped. But, yeah, it would be nice if he turned it around, but I don't know.
A couple guys I'm surprised with. The Dikers in fifth, solid, because he kind of got dropped. You know, he's on a privateer team, kind of. And also Philipparts. I mean, Philipparts is kind of underrated. I know he's on the Rinaldi Yamaha team, but he's just solid, huh?
Yeah, he just seems to be clicking it around, and mm-hmm. he doesn't seem... I mean, that year he won the championship, he was just on fire. He had some races where I remember standing there thinking, oh, gee, this is... I don't know if I've seen a guy ride this fast.
Right.
So aggressive, but this year he's not quite there. I don't know, maybe the Yamahas aren't that great this year, because the Dyke has also looked not like he did on the Suzuki. Sometimes he's lacking something. I don't know what that is. Yeah, I don't know. It's hard to tell. I'm not a mechanic and I'm not a rider, so those guys know better than me. But it seems to me as though that both those guys are maybe lacking something somewhere, whether it's power or what.
I would think the Diker, with his up and down sort of career, and finally being on maybe a little bit of subpar equipment, he might take a bigger step back. So that's why I was kind of impressed. But I don't follow this thing nearly as close as you. So
yeah. Started the year and they're talking pretty down about it all, you know, and you sort of thought, oh, gee, his head doesn't seem to be that good.
Mm-hmm.
But he has had two or three rides. His last ride in Spain, he looked pretty good. You know, he didn't do too bad at the Nationals, I guess, you know, considering I think it was a stock bike.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. Now it's time to pay some bills.
Thanks for listening to the BTOsports.com podcast show. Please don't forget that BTO is the world leader in aftermarket motocross parts for the bike or body. You'll find deals like a Shoei VFXW helmet for $309.99, 45% off, or Smith Piston goggles for $32.99, 65% off. Your order can be shipped to anywhere in the USA for free, or if you're not in the USA, we ship worldwide. Check it out at BTOsports.com.
What about my guy Coppins? I mean, he's having some up and down, but he's on that bike and working hard and trying hard.
Yeah, I think it's harder than he thought it was going to be. And I mean, I must say, in Bulgaria, watching Josh, because you know what he's like. He just doesn't give up. And I mean, he's gained a lot of respect from people. It's hard to imagine that he can gain respect for putting in an effort, because that's always we always knew he gave it 100%. But on that Aprilia, because it's obviously not the bike that he's used to. He's riding really on the edge, and I just hope he doesn't go and hurt himself because he's really pushing hard. Maybe he'll back off now a little bit and just sort of finish the year. I don't know.
Well, you know, I didn't think that thing looked that good that bad last year with Bill and the other dude riding it, the Spanish dude.
Yeah, but they got he's on the 2010 bike, and the other guys were started on those, and they've all gone back to the.
Oh, really?
Back to the 2000. That's what I've heard. That okay. They've gone back to the 2009 bikes. He's still on the 2010 because that's typical Josh. If he's going to start something, then he's going to finish it.
Yeah, he's looking at his job as being development too, as well.
Exactly. Yeah. They're paying him.
Good guy, that Coppins, huh?
Yeah, he's a Kiwi. I think Kiwi's probably the best people in the world, I think.
Yeah, I got to say. It's
like Canadians. Canadians against Americans, you know. Aussies and Americans, we've pretty much got big mouths, and we'll sprout off how great our countries are and how great we are. And Canadians and New Zealanders.
Kind of like the stepbrother that gets beat up all the time, and we're just happy to be here.
That's a little bit what it's like, and New Zealanders don't, they're not big mouths, they don't tell everybody how great they are, but they do have that sort of friendly Aussie sort of, you know.
Right. So, let's start talking about this weekend. USGP at Glen Helen. Definitely a massive turn of events over here, as you know, when all that went down. What's been the reaction in the pits to the GP and the sort of the fiasco that went down over here and the suddenness of the GP and all that? What's been the reaction in the pits?
Well, originally, and it hasn't changed that much, because obviously the news came out, you know, and everyone thought it was an April Fool's joke, and that's pretty much what everyone thought for a week or so. And obviously we came to Bulgaria for the first GP, and it was clear that there was going to be a USGP. Now, the atmosphere was amazingly good. Some of the smaller teams, obviously struggling with budgets and stuff, were a bit concerned, rightly so. But the actual feeling was, we need a USGP. Now, you know, I talked to Steve Cox about it, and Steve was pretty much like, you know, if the Americans don't want to ride, you know, it's just a joke. But, you know, my way of looking at it is, Kay Rowley, Roxon, Herlings, DeSalle, Nagel, all these guys running around Glen Helen sounds pretty bloody impressive to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you're excited. Teams are excited.
Everybody's excited. The riders are over the moon because, you know, America is the centre of motocross. You know, it's the biggest industry, and everything's big in America. I mean, you know, coming from Australia, you know, we're all in the NFL and all these NASCAR and IndyCar and all these big, and that's what America's like. And I'm sure because of the politics with Glen Helen, you know, not doing a national and obviously Ustream wanting to make an impression in America, I just hope some people turn, you know, they get a nice big crowd because I'm pretty sure, I don't know if you agree, but I think it'll be, visual-wise, I think it's going to be very, very impressive. You know, I think it's going to be a lot of the American companies putting on a big performance there. So it's a beautiful track, you know. Obviously, it's not like with Shugel and all those beautiful tracks that run through the trees and all that sort of stuff, but it is pretty
with the hills,
track.
Yeah. With the hills, it's a visually striking track, no doubt about
it. Yeah, and dangerous.
Yeah, it is a little dangerous. I'm sure some of the guys, I don't know what they have planned for jumps over there, but some of the guys, GP guys, might be a little freaked out. But I'm not sure how many people they're going to draw. I don't think myself it's going to do that well, but I'm excited for it, and it's super cool. I agree. Americans or not, it's cool. You know, I don't care who races it, but it should be cool. I think the people will see these new bikes and these trick bikes and some very good riders. And
and hopefully because of Lacey, yeah, it's a pity Lacey didn't win the first round, because had he won the first round, then we would have more or less been able to say, hey, we've got the best American coming here.
Yeah.
Well, he still is the best American because obviously he's Australian. Yeah. So we've got the best AMA American rider coming. Tommy Searle showed good speed. If he rides, I don't know if he's going to ride it, because I guess he's got an injury.
Yeah,
or something.
He went down to the second moto after a very impressive first moto.
Yeah, so, you know, with a Lacey riding on the 350, with Kay Rowley riding on the 350, with that really impressive MX2 class, if they don't get a crowd, I'm really concerned about the motocross mentality in Southern California, because, okay, there's not Dungey and there's not Reed and there's some of these other guys aren't going to be there, but you don't have to always see the same guys racing. You know, it's sometimes nice to see something different. And I'm sure there's going to be a lot of old school guys that have went to the GPs in the 90s and 80s that are going to want to come out and watch it.
Yeah, and speaking of which, what's your US GP history?
Yeah, my first one was 1984 at Carlsbad, and I remember turning up there and seeing the... I'd actually been to America in 78 for a couple of supercrosses, one in Daytona and one in Houston.
Uh-huh.
My dad took us all over for a holiday. But I remember going to that Carlsbad race and watching the Americans going up the hill and thinking, these guys are... I honestly thought, because I'd never been to a international motocross before, only races in Australia. And I remember watching them go up the hill and think, these guys are all going to crash, because they were just, you know, Americans are just on the gas, hanging it off,
right?
And I really thought they're all going to crash. And then I've only been in 84 and 99 at Bud's Creek, so I've only ever been to two.
Right. Did you go to the Bud's? You went to the Bud's Creek Destinations?
Yep.
And but I think it's going to be interesting. Like, Alessi does well at Glen Helen, as we know. But Caroli, I think there's going to be some fans there sit thinking that, like, say a Kyle Chisholm races or a Sipes, I'm sure there's going to be people standing on the track going to be like, okay, it'll be Alessi, Sipes, Chisholm, you know, and then the first European. But I think they're going to be in for a little bit of a shock.
Yeah, I hope, because obviously, because Alessi and Townley have ridden them, you know, thousands of laps, those guys will have an advantage. They know the feeling there, you know, the warmth, the time zones is good for them. So I'm imagining they'll have a big advantage. Now, how much better is Caroli? Caroli laid, you know, showed Chad and Ryan Dungey how they do it in Europe at the Donations when he beat those two guys.
Mm-hmm.
But you know yourself, there's a huge advantage when you're running at home.
Mm-hmm.
The tracks are so different. But I really, really hope that Antonio can run with Alessi and they can have a great battle. And, you know, the Euros don't have to be better. It just has to be good racing between some AMA guys and the FIM guys.
Yeah. Do you think some of the mentality of the GP riders might be a little bit, hey, we're just riding for points here, like, I got to beat my GP guys? And
I think that'll always be the case.
Yeah.
You know, it's like why would the AMA guys run the GP when the GP guys don't run the first round of the... Mm-hmm. I really thought maybe some GP guys would go to the first round of the Nationals, but it's obviously not interesting. There's little interest for them to do that as there is for the AMA guys to do the GP.
Yeah, exactly. Musquin was there. He was hanging out, but didn't want to do it. And what do you make of the Dykers' performance at Hangtown? Not bad. I thought pretty good.
Yeah, I think pretty stable to what, you know, DeSalle did last year and DeRuva did when he went to Southwick. And I think it's pretty much similar. You know, that's the thing. I think half the best guys in the world are in Europe and half the best guys in the world are in America. And I really think that. I don't think there's better guys in America and I don't think there's better guys in Europe. I think it's pretty, at this period, it's pretty much level to how fast they are. So De Dyke are going 9-8 or whatever he did and the other guys last year and the year before getting pretty much similar results. It's all pretty much...
God.
Expect now.
Every time
I thought to Dyker, because that's a track that's a little bit of European, isn't it?
A little bit, yeah. Yeah, not real big jumps, up and down a hill, up and down some hills, you know. Not a lot of passing areas, but yeah, no, it's a little Euro-ish.
So I sort of thought to Dyker, had he rode to his full potential, had a chance of winning it. But yeah, there's so much involved, you know, with the time change and the jet lag and the standard bike and then guys are going to struggle. It's like when Mike Gillacy came to he had an injury, but when he came to Mantua for the international and he was miles off the pace, and you know Jimmy's I guess around about a top ten guy in America, and you know he's
struggling.
Yeah.
I guess the Michael Lessie that you saw in those preseason races was Not the same guy you watched some video of probably this past weekend.
No, definitely not. Yeah. In fact, I'm pretty surprised because I was thinking, gee, is he going to struggle? You know, he's gone back to KTM and maybe he's not happy with the 350. And you hear, you hear all stories that he's changing teams and he's not happy and all sorts of stuff. But yeah, then he comes out of the Nationals and just the second motor. Obviously, we didn't see it here because there was a problem with the live link. At least I didn't see it. But yeah, he's on the gas. I mean, you know, Chad looked awesome. So is he going to have something for Chad? If Chad gets a good start, it'll be interesting.
Yeah, no, for sure. And there is something to him about switching teams. There definitely was. I was the guy who was kind of reporting that stuff, and I can definitely tell you there was a Yamaha around there, and there was some talks and discussions and all that. So, but I mean, now I'm pretty sure that's all quiet, you know, with the performance of what happened on the weekend.
I don't know what they did with the bike or what they did with Mike's head, but obviously something turned around because he was.
Yeah.
I mean, last year he was the guy last year, wasn't he? Until he got injured.
Until he got injured, he was on his way to the title, no doubt about it. After Villopoto got hurt, I would say Villopoto put in a pretty impressive performance at Glen Helen last year, and then got hurt. So, what are you thinking this weekend? If you had to predict the winner of this weekend, what are you thinking? Is Mike going to do it? Will Chioti be there?
Caroli. I struggled to go past the Lacey Alain only because he's ridden there a lot. He's often done well there. He looked impressive last weekend. He doesn't have to worry about time chain, you know, time zones and air flights. So I would like to think that Caroli's the fastest motocross rider in the world, but I'm going to say Alain because I think he'll be more prepared for that race. Maybe he goes there and just rolls around because he doesn't want to hurt himself. Who knows?
Yeah, I know exactly. It's got to be nice for you to see BT back riding, doing
pretty
well.
Ben's he could win it.
Yeah, maybe.
I mean, you know, he's somebody he'd like to win a GP again.
Yeah.
It's not obviously a priority, but he needs a lot of track time, and I think he's got a good chance to run up there. I mean, it would be great to see him and Caroli Dyson again, like they did in the 2004 World MX2 World Championship, and they're also pretty good friends. And I mean, just him. If I look at the top 10 last weekend, you know, Townley was in there, Lacey was in there, Dodika was in there. You know, I'm pretty happy that we've got three guys out of the AMA top 10 that are going to be, you know, in the top 10 from that first round.
Yeah.
That are going to be racing there. And then the same with, what's his name, Tickle, is it, or Trickle? Or
Tickle's not going to be there, I guess, now.
He's not going.
No, but Max Anstey will be there. Maybe a couple of Moto Concepts guys, but that's who I look. I think the MX2 class is going to be an all Euro show.
But
maybe Purcell will show up. Yeah, right.
Yeah, I actually thought maybe one of those guys would be sitting on their couch during the week and think, you know, Chad might think, you know what, I wouldn't mind doing the GP. Yeah, I'll put my name down. But I think they've got 40 guys on the starting gate anyway, so I don't know how they would kick out one of the slower AMA guys. I don't know if it...
How that would go over, yeah. I know Ratchet was really close to doing it, really close, but... Didn't want to pull out at the last second.
Yeah, it's a pity because I think Tyler doing that, if he did that and did well, maybe it would help him. Because he obviously seems to be not quite, like happens with a lot of guys, they go from one series to the other series and they struggle whether it's going here or coming here or whatever. Mm-hmm. And maybe if he did good at Glen Helen and even won it, help him in the head a bit. I don't know. I'm not saying that there's something wrong with his head.
Yeah, just help his confidence out. Hey, what was the reaction in the pits like when Ustream originally tried to waive the rules for the American teams as far as fuel and sound, and then there was a bit of a brouhaha, and the motorcycle council stepped in, and everything got changed, and rightfully so, in my opinion, you should have to run the GP rules. But was that pretty sticky there for a little bit?
Yeah, not really, because a few riders sort of talked about it, but it wasn't really a big enough issue, and I don't think a lot of people really knew what was going on I didn't see too much problem from it, and it pretty much it came in pretty quickly and changed around again.
Yeah.
Like you said, rightly so, because
Do you believe they should, all the American teams should run GP rules, right?
Yeah, I think, I don't know what the story is, the donations, but, you know, that's pretty much, well, you hear a lot of riders saying, gee, those American bikes sound noisy.
Yeah.
And so I don't know.
I'm with you on that. I don't know what's up with that, but they do sound noisier, that's for sure.
Well, we've got to take care of the Americans, because without them, you know, the motocross donations, I mean, wouldn't be what it is, and so we've really got to thank the Americans. So if we've got to do something to get them involved or whether that's they're allowed to run the same bikes they're running in America, you know, so be it. I don't care.
Yeah, you don't care. I know when I was there in 2003 working for a ferry, it was like we were like rock stars, man. Not so much me, but the riders. Anyways, they were like it was like the Beatles came to town or something.
Yeah, that seems to have balanced out a little bit though. I don't know what, but obviously that was the year of Zolder, wasn't it? With
yeah.
Ricky, when
yeah.
Ricky more or less saved the motocross donations because the Americans hadn't gone for that
yeah.
2 years.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that guy, we owe that guy, the Motocross Donations, maybe they should call it the Ricky Carmichael Donations, because because he changed it. Since he did that race, it started, and then 2005 when he did France, you know, he again, you know, I mean, the Americans, they're super important here, and that's, you know, it's unfortunately, and I've talked to Giuseppe about it, you know, the Americans are still considered better. And it's not right because the GP guys now are as good.
Yeah.
And it's a pity that Chad and that aren't riding, because I really think while they've all had all that extra time on Glen Helen and they are on the right time zone and they're used to the American situation, I really think Kay Roll is probably good enough to run with those guys anywhere.
Mm-hmm. Anywhere. Yeah, well,
yeah.
I saw him at Teuchenthal and saw him at the Diz Nations. Yeah, very impressive. No doubt about it. I think the age-old argument is dumb on the internet message boards. I just think it's silly. It's different over there. It's different over here. And you can't say one way or another who's better.
As a
Canadian, you know, living in America, I think I have a bit of neutrality, and I don't know, you know, everybody's fast at that level. I will say when I was in Teuchenthal last year, and that's where I met you, the difference in riding styles from MX2 to MX1 was a stark contrast, I believe. The 250 kids scrubbing, charging, aggressive. The 450 guys way more laid back. I definitely believe that.
Yeah, but now it's even shooting more. Now it's amazing. If you see these MX2 guys, I mean, I've been watching the AMA, you know, a lot of the tapes that Transworld do and the practice at Glen Helen and watching guys going through the rhythm sections and I hate to sound like MX Jeff from 10 years ago, but if I'm watching the guys, actually I was going through a divorce then, that's why I was so bitter on the internet. But I if I'm watching those guys going through rhythm sections, and I'm thinking, you know what? I'm more impressed by guys, the GP guys, going through rhythm sections now than I am watching the AMA guys. Mm-hmm. And in fact, Josh at the Motocross of Nations last year passed Chad Reed through that sort of wave section.
Yeah.
And then he got squiggly, like right at the end of it, and backed right off, and Chad got away from him.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I remember Josh saying, "I can't believe that I passed Chad Reed going through." Okay, they weren't whoops, but they were.
Yeah,
you know,
right. Wow. Reedy, I guess not. Reedy was all right. I was going to say, a lot of times he doesn't put in a huge effort for those designations, as we saw in England, but I think that one he was pretty ready for.
Yeah, I think that one he pretty much put it all on the line. He actually won it. He won a moto, you know, that year he was over here, he won a moto 2001.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact crashed in the second one when he was up against Evans, and it's a pity because I was really thinking, obviously being an Aussie, I was thinking, hey, Chad's going to bloody win the MX Motocross the Nation overall.
Yeah. Is Reed the best Australian rider ever, in your eyes?
Yeah,
without a doubt.
I mean, you know, got guys like Leeske and that, but Leeske Leeske's a legend in Australia. But if you actually compare Leeske to Michael Byrne or even Andrew McFarlane to some extent, Byrne has probably had in America more success than Jeff had. You know, I mean, okay, Jeff was in a pretty tough era with, you know, that was the era of Rotten, you know, all the top. Yeah, exactly. So it was a pretty tough era. But Leeske's a legend in Australia. Stephen Gall's a legend, and he maybe wasn't as talented as those guys, but his presentation and stuff. But yeah, Chad's head and shoulders above anybody.
I did one of these with Leeske, and pretty much.
Listen to it.
Oh, that's right. I think we talked. Yeah, he didn't want to even talk about his racing. He really not a guy that lives in the past at all.
You know, one of the best Motocross the Nations experiences I've ever had was at Motocross the Nations at Unadilla in 87.
Yeah.
And shitty weather. Mm-hmm. And Leeske was injured, so he didn't ride in the Australian team. Best night, best experience I've ever had was him and me going into a bar, getting absolutely slaughtered.
Was it around the track somewhere? Because that'd be a scary bar.
It was a scary bar, but the great thing was we were so drunk, we can't remember what sort of bar it was. All I remember was standing on the table with Jeff standing on the table next to me talking about negatively about Americans. but that was he's a great guy, and he's not somebody that really is interested in. It's a pity because a lot of guys like Eric Cabors, you can really sit down with him and screw his brain for information. I mean, I'll tell you a quick story. I was when we were talking about the donations off the USGP at the Bulgarian Grand Prix. I was standing there with Dave Nickel, who I don't know if you saw the thing on MX Large, but he was the first guy that won the Trans Am in 1970 in America. Now he's the clerk of the course or sports director for the FIM. I was talking with him and Paul Malin. And across from us was Eric Gabors and Harry Evetts, and they were talking. Now, they're both about, I'm only 5'7", and they're both about a half a head smaller than me. And I said to Paul Mayo, and I said, look at these two guys. There's 9 world championships there. So I walked over to them and started talking to them about the USGP, and Eric explained how he won his last ever GP at Glen Helen in 1990. And then I'm talking to them, and Stefan Evetts walks over. So then there's 19 world championships, and
then there's you,
and there's me. So all together between the four of us, there was 19 world championships.
Yeah, very impressive, very impressive.
Yeah, and then Stefan started talking about the USGP, but that's what's great about the sport. When you get all these guys, and they're just they're really just fans, even the races.
Yeah, Everett seemed really excited about everything. Like, again, I talked to him for probably 20 minutes, and he's a great guy. Man, Everett is a great guy. But anyways, he was really excited about the GP. Of course, this was after Michael Lessie had just dominated the moto, but he was very happy. You know, and a lot of people forget, too, the Americans dominated the US GP for a long, long time. But, man, Demarais won the Buds Creek. Gabors won one or two. You know, near the end of the US GP's reign, America wasn't always winning, you know?
No.
So people kind of forget that a little bit. But, man, MX Jeff, always a pleasure. On your birthday, too, doing this podcast, man, I appreciate it.
This is sort of like a present.
Yeah, I don't know about that. Some people wouldn't think that, but I'm glad you do. I'll send you the bill for the long distance charges, by the way.
Oh, great. Thanks very much.
When are you getting over here?
I get over on Wednesday and then fly on Wednesday night, and then I'm going to spend, I want to go out, I don't know, where, I want to go out to Huntington Beach or something, so I don't know, somewhere Wednesday night.
Yeah.
Is that nice, Huntington Beach?
Yeah, Huntington or Newport's probably nicer. Newport is the next community south of Huntington, so it's only like 10 minutes or whatever, but Huntington or Newport, there's a Marriott right on the corner of PCH, which is the highway that runs down the coast, and the 55 in Newport, it's really nice. You can go there and sit on there and have a brunch, and beach is right there and all that. So
okay, well, I'm going to do that, and then Thursday I'm going to head out to the San Bernardino and And we've got, apparently there's a Red Bull Nike, they're going to take us into Hollywood, and the Red Bull KTM guys are going to be there apparently, and it's some sort of some entertainment night or something.
Some trouble will be started.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, as long as they don't serve us Budweiser, because that's not obviously not going to get us drunk, is it?
Yeah, no, not at all. All right, man. Well, thank you, and yeah, I'll see you this weekend. I'll see you around the pits, I'm sure. And
look forward to it.
And thank you again for doing the BTOsports.com Transworld Motocross podcast show. Look at the USGP. I appreciate it, man.
Yeah, thanks very much for asking me.
Oh yeah, no problem.
Nice to chat.
No problem, Jeff. See you, man.
See you, mate.
Bye.
Bye.
This has been the BTOsports.com podcast show, brought to you by Transworld Motocross. Don't forget to check out some of our past shows, including motocross legends such as
The Beast from the East, Damon Bradshaw.
It got to the point where I didn't want to leave home, and once I got to the race, I wasn't into it. If I wasn't going to give 100%, I'm not going to take their money.
The working class hero, Doug Henry.
It was definitely an emotional moment for me, just thinking to myself, that's it, you know, and it's amazing the stuff that goes through your head in a short amount of time of the things that, you know, that I was going to miss.
The Dogger, Ron Machine.
Until you really open your ears and you want to listen to what they're saying, it's like beating a dead horse. I mean, you know, and I know from personal experience, did anybody ever sit me down? Of course, everybody did.
Pro Circuits, Mitch Payton.
There's two ways to make the money. One is you can sign for money, or two, you can earn the money. I'm a high believer in earning the money. I think they ride better when they earn the money.
Seven-time Jeremy McGrath.
I was so mad, like so disappointed and so frustrated that I pulled pick and I left. Every point counts. I could kick myself to this day for not just riding around in tents. It's been no problem. My ego got in the way, you know?
The O Show, Johnny O'Mara.
Stuff that you sit there, you didn't even want to ride it, you just wanted to just look at it all day. I mean, I got a chance to test all that. I like that era I was in. I really do.
Search Mathis on the iTunes Store to find these and many more great podcasts. I won't let this die. You know I've got this right up in the atmosphere. Another reason, another